Welcome back to another episode of On Life and Being Human. I'm your host, Catherine Colleen, and this is the podcast where we teach you how to create complete connection to yourself and every aspect of your life, whether that's to accelerate your personal development or get through a crisis or a major life transition. We are here for you. Before we get started today, I want to take a special moment to thank some of the cities that are tuning in. And this is something I'm going to be doing at the beginning of every episode now. So for today, I want to say a big thank you to Mumbai, Noida, and Bengaluru, India. Isambandh Kiliya Dhanyavad. Thank you for this connection. So many awesome cities tune in from all over the world and 74 different countries, some of whose languages I'm studying and many that I'm not. But I want to take a moment at the start of each podcast from now on to say that I see you there. Thank you for tuning in. I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you for sending in your questions. And if you have more questions, you can send them into questions@koabd.com. Or you can go to the community page at the website at KatherineColleen.com or KOABD.com. They go to the same place. Go to the community page and put in your questions for me there. Anything you want to ask, I'll get back to you personally, and often we'll use your question on the air. So we've had so many questions come in from the holidays. So in the U.S. and in Europe, in other parts of the world, December is a month of family gatherings. And you'd think this would be a month of joy. Absolutely not. This is a month of, can be of great stress. It can be great fun, but you're taken completely out of your routine. And this can cause a lot of stress. So it's no wonder why I got a ton of questions in about family issues, sort of spawned by these interactions over the holidays. And so in this episode, we're going to focus entirely on audience questions about family issues and try to help with some of that. Okay, so let's get started. So the first question is, why do people act out so irrationally about politics? Why do they believe wild rumors? Okay, so, we're going to start with politics. That's a heavy one. Why did I put that first? When family gets together, you are bound to have somebody representing pretty much any side of a political debate, right? Just get a group of people together. As much as you would expect that families might kind of all fall to the left or to the right just because of family influence, it's almost never that way. It's almost always that you have a scattering of people on the left and the right, as they would say here in North America, or more liberal, more conservative, whatever word you use to define your various political parties. You tend to have one party that's a little bit more sort of rugged individualism and one party that's a little bit more government involvement. And you tend to, in the family, have people who are on both sides. And so when we get together as family, one of the reasons it's so stressful is you feel like you're spending a huge chunk of your time defending your identity to these people, which is extraordinarily hard. As Dave Ramsey would put it, it's powdered butt syndrome. Anybody who changed your diapers is going to have a very hard time taking you seriously at all. If they powdered your butt, they're going to have a very hard time seeing you as a legitimate adult with something to contribute to society. It's not that they can't, it's just unlikely, right? It's much more likely that they'll have a hard time. So, to the question of why do people act so irrationally about politics, why do they believe wild rumors? when you're in stage five, and I'm gonna damn near guarantee you that whoever you're talking about is probably in stage five. Because stage five, I am my ideology, is the only time when people act irrationally about their ideologies, be it their political ideologies, usually political, religious ideologies, social, moral ideologies, general ideologies about how life works. Ideology can encompass a lot of topics, but politics is a really intense aspect of that self-identity. And if you are in stage five, then this is the sum total of your identity. You are your ideology. So for everybody out there, not just the person who asked the question, but for everybody out there, you know someone in your family who is completely identified with their ideology. How can you spot them? One, they talk about it all the time. If any conversation begins, it will end with them talking about politics, right? They'll bring it up. You know, this political figure did that. This other political figure said this. Do you believe that? They spend a lot of their time offended and upset and angry about some political thing happening somewhere. And it's a really unpleasant stage to be in. And it's a really unpleasant stage for other people to be around you in. And it can be very confusing for other people. So if you're even just in stage six, just one step beyond, you are still identifying with your ideology, but it's a very live and let live. I have my ideas, you have yours. Who cares? We're all going to live in our own way. It's all good. And so it can be very confusing as to why this person is just so adamant and trying to change everybody's minds and get everybody pissed off at the same person. And people in that stage five who are so completely self-identified with their ideology are very vulnerable to believing wild rumors that are put out on news sites and headlines and random websites and social media. And wild rumors are even more prevalent today. Wild rumors have always been a thing, right, in the political world, of course. But they seem to be more prevalent today probably because they get clicks. If you go to your favorite news website, the headlines are even more outlandish, right? It's not just subject, verb, object, right? This person did this thing. It'll have all of these superlatives in it. It'll have all these extra words in it that just conjure up emotions, and they're wild, and they embellish a particular aspect of the story that ends up becoming the wild rumor. So if you're in stage five, you're very prone to believe any wild rumor that supports your ideology. So any wild rumor that says this other person is bad or horrible, that supports your ideology by calling the other side wrong. And any wild rumor that supports your definition that everybody else is wrong, I am right, they are wrong, and if it supports the fact that they are wrong, they will take that wild rumor and choose to believe it because it boosts up their identity, their sense of self, which is completely wrapped in their ideology. Now, they will eventually move beyond stage five. And it can take different things to make different life events to make that happen, or they simply become exhausted with the whole thing because being offended and angry all the time is exhausting. They'll grow out of that. And when you get beyond stage five and you're not spending most of your time there, then you look at these headlines, you look at these embellished rumors, and you kind of laugh at them. You're like, geez, that's ridiculous. And you see them for what they are, and you can dig deeper and find the real story. But mostly you just see how irrelevant it all is, actually is to your daily life. And you move on. So that's why. So why do people act so irrationally about politics, and why do they believe wild rumors? Because they're in stage five, and their ideology, their political ideology, is the sum total of their definition of self. And you might go, oh no, but I need to help them get out of that because, you know, how sad is it to be nothing more than your political ideology? You know, they've got so much more to offer this world. And it's true that they do, and they will, and there's a beautiful soul in there that has something more to offer this world, and they will figure that out, but you are not the one who's going to get them there. Their journey is theirs. Remember that throughout all these questions. You are not the one that will move them to a different stage if they are not ready to do that, if they are not wanting to do that. So that relative we've all got who's stuck in stage five and they go on wildly about politics, just and change the subject as fast as you can. Okay, next question. My parents don't approve of my choices and make me feel like nothing. Oh, I'm sorry. My parents don't approve of my choices and make me feel like nothing. They used to berate me openly, so ignoring or discounting my efforts is an improvement. Question, what should I do? And how can I not give them power to make me feel small? Okay, so I am sorry that you have dealt with that. We all would love to live in an ideal world where our parents love us unconditionally, have the capacity to truly love us fully at the level of our souls, and are kind and supportive. But, you know, that's not reality. So the bad news is, for this listener, I'm sorry, your parents are human and flawed like the rest of us, right? Every parent is inherently an amateur. Your choices are taken as an affront to their identity. So they have this definition of self that they are operating in. And one of their definitions of self was probably, I am a good parent. And to them, being a good parent, which can mean a lot of things for a lot of people, but apparently to your parents, being a good parent means directing the course of your life. So for them, if you went into what they think is the wrong industry or the wrong line of work, or married the wrong person, or, you know, shock, divorced the wrong person, or if you, you know, did something that is against their belief set, and their belief set can be very, very narrow. Some parents have a belief set that my child needs to work in this industry and they need to never do these things and always do those things. And they can have a really huge set of expectations for their children, a long list that's very narrow. And if you step outside of that box, then they are a bad parent is their ultimate subconscious fear. So they take that out on you because you dared to step outside the box of their expectations. They then feel they need to correct you. Why? Because they don't take you seriously. Why? Because they powdered your butt. That's okay. They feel that as a parent, they must correct you because that's part of their definition of being a good parent. And so their first attempt, as you put it, was to berate you openly, right? To be mean to you openly, right? Like, you shouldn't do that. You're a horrible child, blah, blah, blah. That's an ugly way to do it. But you know what? Life doesn't always deal us nice and supportive parents. Sucks, but this is what you got. And so they probably noticed that berating you openly didn't work. Why? I'm going to guess that because you're an adult with your own income, when they berated you openly, you just kind of don't talk to them so much, right? You just kind of fade away and move away from them. And they could feel that you didn't really want anything to do with them, because why would you want anything to do with someone who openly berates you, right? So they've shifted now to making you feel like nothing. So as you describe it, ignoring or discounting your efforts. This is great in the sense that it's a huge improvement over just openly telling you that you're horrible. Ignoring and discounting your efforts, that can really suck, because we all deep down want parents that are loving and supportive. And when you feel this discounting and this ignoring, when they treat your efforts like they're not important, oh, you're a silly thing, oh, this is ridiculous, that can hurt. It can be toxic. It can make you feel so, as you put it, small. And then it gets you kind of pissed off, because you don't want to be giving them that kind of power, right? You're grown. You don't need their approval. If they can't see or feel that what you're doing is important for you, they don't have to shout it from the rooftops. They don't have to choose to agree with what you're doing. But this sort of passive aggressive, I'm going to, you know, every time you bring up what you're doing, we're just going to kind of ignore it or discount it like, that's dumb, and move on. But it's still painful, right? And it's much easier to not give random individuals on the street, right, can go, that's dumb. And you'd be like, well, you're an idiot, and move on. But when it's your parents, it is next to impossible to take 100% of that power away from them. They will almost always have a little tiny doorway into your subconscious that they get to sneak in there and implant these negative ideas about yourself. Why? Because when you were young, under the age of about 7 years old, our brains are primed in this almost hypnosis type state. It's how we take in so much of the societal rules and how life works. We're learning at a very, very rapid rate. And we're doing that partly because there's a doorway into the subconscious, which is open. And so the people who were around you at that age, influencing you and teaching you at that age, that is your parents, your older siblings, can often have this kind of power. And your parents almost always still have that doorway to your subconscious that they seem to get to just walk through anytime they want. So how can I not give them the power to make me feel small? Distance. Get away from them. Have less to do with them. I really, really hope you don't live with them. If you do, move. You're just going to have to be somewhere else. So that answers what should I do. You need to spend less time with them. And parents who do this kind of passive-aggressive attempt at controlling the direction of your life, they are probably, they might change. From a stages perspective, they are, they could be very well be in stage 6. in terms of their political ideologies, you know, live and let live, everybody has their own political ideology or whatever, even religious ideologies, but they still have an ideology that they're holding on to that's set and that they're defending. And your actions, which are different, which are outside of the box they have laid out for you, your actions are, in essence, taken as an attack against their ideology of how you ought to live, about how you ought to be conducting your life. And so this is a stage five thing. Almost any time that you see attacks on concepts, you're looking at a stage five thing. And so the only thing to do, and life may change them drastically over time, and that would be really cool, but the only thing to do is just spend a lot less time talking to them. On holidays, we can often feel obligated that we're supposed to spend that time with family, with, I'll call them blood relatives. And we'll talk later about how, in another episode, about the big difference between blood relatives and family. But we can often feel like we are obligated to spend time with them. I want to put a crazy idea in your head of, what if you didn't? What if you just didn't talk to them as often? What if you limited your contact with them? Now, this may attack your ideology, your opinion of yourself as a good child, as a good person, right? So you may have some rules for yourself on how you think you should live, and your rules might say something like, well, a good son calls his mother once a week. Okay, do it if you need to, but keep it short. Keep the focus of the conversation on them. So during those times when you have to have contact with family, parents, or anybody who's going to belittle your efforts, and you know for a fact they're going to do it, number one, do not expect them to do different. And number two, keep the conversation focused on them. Don't try to explain what you're doing. And when they, if they bring it up, and that's a huge if, right? They'll just talk about themselves for hours usually, and that's fine. If they bring up, hey, so what are you doing? Just be like, oh, you know, same old. And then be like, hey, you know, tell me about that meeting you were going to the other day. Or hey, you know, how's cousin Jen doing? And just change the conversation back to them and someone else. And then it doesn't really give them as much of an opportunity to do that kind of thing. All right. Next question. My sister is deeply into her political ideology, which is opposite to my parents, and it's driving them apart. What can I do? Right. Okay. So let's examine this. My sister is deeply into her political ideology. So she's in stage five. She's identified completely with her political ideology right now. And this is opposite to the parents. So the parents have the opposite political ideology, and it's driving them apart. The fact that it's driving them apart tells me that your parents are also in stage five. And these are like opposing forces here. So when you have two people, both in stage five with opposite beliefs, it's just going to be one big fight after another. Fight. They're going to be at each other's throats all the time, attacking each other's ideologies, because just the fact that that another person exists who believes differently than you is an attack on your very being, and you cannot let that stand. So they're attacking each other because they're both in stage five. What should you do? Nothing. You should get out of the way. Get out of the way. And the sister and the parents should spend a lot less time together. Until, as usual, life will evolve them. One of them will get to stage six, and then they'll be able to find something to talk about that isn't politics. The only other way I've seen this work, and it doesn't really work, is that they kind of put it out on the table and kind of openly go, okay, look, I believe A, you believe B, you know, I vehemently disagree with you, you vehemently disagree with me, so let's just like make a rule that we're just not going to talk about politics. And then they'll have some other set of subjects that they will talk about, you know, the kids, grandkids, or upcoming travel, or the weather, and there's a whole bunch of safe subjects, but it ends up just sort of becoming this environment of restricted speech, and everybody's uncomfortable, and just kind of going through the motions, and just kind of putting up with it, and I'm not certain that that's really a solution. If it's something that you prefer, you can suggest that to the sister and the parents, that maybe the subject should be off limits for this particular holiday. Maybe they'll go through with that, but it's really, really hard for someone who is if their entire definition of self is wrapped up in their political ideology, they're going to talk about it. They're going to be busting to talk about it, because wherever you're at with your definition of self right now is what you're going to want to talk about. And you can try to control it, but that's kind of tough. I guess there's a bigger picture here forming, right? That sometimes the best thing is to take a break from family. That it's okay to create a little distance between you and a family member, or several family members if you have to, for a little while. And that space gives you both time to evolve. All right, let's keep going. My grown children are making what seems like really irrational choices. How can I let go of my need to steer their lives and just be happy for them if they are happy for themselves? Okay, now we hear from mom and dad. All right. Okay, so here you are, parents, feeling like your children are making some really dumb choices. Yeah, those are my words, not yours. I get it. But that's really how you feel. You're looking at their choices and going, wow, what a bunch of idiots. But at the same time, you recognize that they're grown and that you really can't, it's not your job to steer their life anymore. The fact that you have the intention and desire to just be happy for them, if they're happy for themselves, if they're happy, be like, well, that's great. If they're sad, be like, oh, I'm sorry. Is different from you having to materially support their choices, right? And yes, it's still going to be obvious to your children that you don't like their choices, right? Because if you've already put that out in the open, they're going to be getting that vibe from you all day long. So this is not a situation where I would suggest necessarily that you limit your contact with them. But I would say because you think that they're making some bad choices or some irrational choices, as you put it, maybe don't discuss those choices, because at least you've gotten far enough. So I can tell from the way you wrote this that you are stage six. You still have your ideology, but you're a little bit more live and let live. You recognize that it's not for you to control other people, including your children. And you want to really let go of that. I would shine a spotlight on your need to define yourself as a good parent. We all need, as parents, to feel like we're doing a good job. It's the hardest job in the world. It's impossible to do it well. Why? Because there is no definition of how to do it well. And it seems like no matter what you do, something about it will have been the wrong answer, and you won't realize it until they're grown. Sucks. But you know you need to let that go. You have the intention to let that go. Good. So shine the light on the fact that I need to feel like a good parent. And the fact that they're making bad choices is making you think that you did something wrong. So you think they made a bad choice. And that makes you think that you did something wrong as a parent. Where did I go wrong that they would make these terrible choices? So I'm going to give you what you need to let this go right now. Number one, nothing you did as a parent led them to these choices. They are grown. Their choices are their own. Past a certain age, somewhere between 13 and 18, you have zero influence. It was not your doing. It was their choice. Their choice is only theirs. It reflects on them. It does not reflect on you. It's got nothing to do with you. So you need to let it go. More importantly, I want you to not only let go of this concept that you need to steer their life, which you realize you don't need to and you can't, I want you to let go of the idea that their choice is bad or wrong or irrational. Because you think it is, because if you had made that choice at that age, it would have ended badly. But this is a different era. These are different people living in a different time. And for them, in their time, you don't know if this is good or bad. You can't possibly know. You don't know your own future, but you think you know theirs. You don't know their future. This could, whatever they're doing, be one of the best things they ever did. It could lead to wonderful things in their life that can be hard to imagine. If they're doing something that leads them to suffering, the suffering may be an important part of their growth. You don't know where the river of their life is trying to take them. And so you've got to let go of the idea that you can have any accuracy in judging whether or not their choices are good or bad or stupid or irrational. You have no idea. Let it all go. And if you can really see that, all you're really doing is comparing them in their age to you at that age, and let that go, that's really the key. That doesn't mean you're going to like what they choose, because you're always going to compare it to whether or not that's right for you, and you're going to go, oh, I wouldn't do that. Well, fine, you don't have to do that. That's great. So when you talk to them, just don't talk about take the subject away from these things that bother you. Just focus on, is my child happy? Yes. Sweet. All right. Great. Are they sad? Oh, that's too bad. You don't have to materially support it. You don't have to provide money. You don't have to do other things. But you do need to let go of this idea that you are qualified to judge whether or not these choices are good or bad for them. Okay, next question. I hate going home for the holidays because I have to sit through nonstop politics, there we are again, discussions where granddad is never wrong and has all the answers for everyone. How can I make visits more enjoyable without ignoring him? Right. Okay. So number one, this is a lesson for all of us as we get older. Are you the person who is going through nonstop politics discussions and is never wrong and has the answers for everyone? Cut it out. Don't be that guy. Don't be that person. But we all know that person, right? So we go home for the holidays and there's that one member of the family and they can't help themselves. They just start going off about politics. And they'll have the answer for everyone, and they're always right and they're never wrong. They're usually older, past a certain age where they're too old to care what anybody else thinks, right? Which is a beautiful age to be at for voicing your opinions. But it really gets annoying for everybody else. So everybody else sitting around going, oh, there goes great uncle so-and-so again. Or in this case, there goes granddad again, going off about politics again. And he's always right, never wrong, as it answers for everyone. It is just, you're really just annoyed at being around them. And no, we don't look forward to it, especially if their belief set is different from yours. And really, you don't want to ignore him either, because if this is your grandfather, you feel like your time with them is limited, which it probably is. And you want to get that time with them, but the time with them is rather annoying. How can you do that? Well, try to change the subject. Try to find, I guarantee you there's something else he's interested in. He's got a hobby of some sort. Get him talking about his hobby. People who are always right, never wrong, they love to talk about themselves. So get him talking about whatever hobby he's into these days that doesn't have to do with politics. And just act interested in that. And when he eventually devolves back to ranting on about whatever, you just sort of go into the same way that you would deal with a five-year-old who's trying to tell you about something, and they just kind of need to get it out. And what do? You just go, what do you think about that? Okay, right? And you just go into kindergarten teacher mode, let him get it out a little bit, and then change the subject back. If you need some motivation, then you could feel like, I'm going to go into this room with this person and I'm going to make them feel heard. And then you can feel good about that mission. I'm going to make them feel heard. I'm going to connect with them and make them feel like somebody's listening. And that's a mission that you can feel good about. So then you don't feel like, oh, I'm going to go in here and subject myself to this. No, you get proactive and say, I'm going to go in here and make people feel heard. I'm going to go in here and form real connections. Understanding that he is in stage 5 can help you not be so annoyed with that. Is he going to get to stage 6 before he passes from this life? Maybe, maybe not. Does it matter? No. He's still a person. He's still human. See his humanity in this stage. And that will help you form a real connection with him and sort of navigate his tendencies. Okay. Last question. Home for vacation, I could not help but notice that my brother looked miserable, overweight, depressed, and like he'd given up. Is it okay for me to say something? Right, okay. In general, we would not suppose that we could interfere in other people's lives and journeys. But with as much of an epidemic as there is in depression across the world these days, you can often feel like you should say something. And so what can you do? Okay, so this is really just more about tact, how you approach it, right? So what you don't want to do is be like, hey, bro, you look fat and depressed. What's up? You don't want to do that. Don't come at him with an insult. Instead, I would come at him with real connection. I would get him alone if you could, but not in a daunting way. Don't be like, hey, can I talk to you in another room? I'd be like, hey, do you want to go out for a beer? or hey, do you want to go out for a coffee? Or just wait for the moment when you're just kind of both sort of sitting in the room. There's not really anybody else around. And be like, how you doing? And look him right in the eyes. Form that full connection with him. Be there, present, fully. Seek the complete connection to him across all areas, right? And as you're looking him in the eyes, as you're asking him this question, send compassion. Let your energy flow out, love and compassion and safety, so that you're creating an energetic space between you that says, hey, you can be honest. You can tell me what's really going on. And he may choose to share and he may not, but you're opening it up. And if he's like, oh, nothing, same old thing, and be like, are you okay? Is this an okay question? Are you okay? And it opens it up. It says, I think you might not be okay. There's something evident to me that you're not 100%. And I care enough that I want to know. If he refuses to share, okay. If he doesn't, if he chooses to open up, that's wonderful. As he opens up to you, as he tells you what's going on, the challenges that he's dealing with, which is usually what it is. We all deal with challenges. He may be dealing with a depression challenge. He may be dealing with problems at work, problems at home, financial problems. Be there presently. Keep that energetic space between you and just listen. Just listen. Just let him pour it out. And if he says something like, I just don't know what to do, or do you have any ideas, then you can share some ideas that you may have. If he's, for example, if he's having financial issues, you may direct him to, hey, you know, there's this Dave Ramsey website is really good. You should go check it out. It helped me get out of debt, and I think it'll help you, you know, maybe it would help you too. I don't know. I'll send you a link. So you can offer up some ideas to try, but make sure that the whole time maintain this complete connection with him. And remember, complete connection, you can use the seven chakras as a metaphor for that. It's about this connection has safety. This connection has creativity, in the sense that the will of the universe can come in here. This connection has independent will for the both of us, and yet here we are connected together. It has compassion from the heart. It has expression from the voice. It has wisdom, and it has higher meaning and energy and connection, and try to maintain that. Sometimes it helps to connect all those concepts when you're speaking with someone who may be going through something. I find it very helpful to have all these concepts connected to the concept of Purna Asati, complete connection. And so as I'm facing them, as I'm listening to them, I'm reaching out with my compassion, with my energy, and sending it to them. They will feel it, even on a subconscious level, and thinking, Purna Asati, I choose to establish a complete connection with you. And you don't have to say it out loud. You just have to have that intention. So I hope that you are able to help him. That being said, with so much prevalence of depression and anxiety and challenges of all kinds in this world, if you feel, any of you out there, if you feel that you're facing a challenge you just kind of don't know how to approach, please contact me. Don't go through it alone. If you know someone who's going through a challenge, help them or send them to the community page. Send me a question. I don't mind. I love to help. And I am here for you. I see you. And it is my honor to make a complete connection with you to help you get through it. Heavy stuff to end on, but family is heavy. It just is. Thanks for all the questions. These are wonderful questions. I hope these are helpful to everybody. The overarching concepts that I see coming out of all of this, the big ideas are, one, we don't try to control other people. Two, go into that family space with a mission, a positive mission. You're not trying to just get through it. You're not trying to just put up with it. You're not dreading it. You're going in going, I am here. I'm going to make a complete connection with these family members. And I am here to help people feel heard. And I am here to send out my energies, right? Because these are all things that you can control. I'm here to fill this room with love and compassion. And you may notice a difference in the dynamics of the room when you do that. So give it a try. All right. Thanks for joining us. As always, if you have questions, go over to the community page. Go to koabd.com or katherinecolleen.com. Click on community. Send in your question, or you can email your questions directly to questions@koabd.com. Let me know how I can help. And as always, I am wishing you, Purna Asati, complete connection.